Hello, gaming intelligentsia. Before we start today's podcast, here is a message from our sponsor. The Agamenex podcast is made possible with the support from our sponsors at Pragmatic Solutions, leaders in intelligent platform technology. The Pragmatic Solutions player account management platform is an incredibly powerful technology stack for today's gaming business. Their modern, modular platform provides all the core services to power your business, and their SaaS licensing model allows you to reduce cost and accelerate your strategic goals. Enterprise technology with decades of operational know-how at scale built in. Upgrade your business to the Pragmatic Solutions PAM platform. Visit www.pragmatic.solutions to arrange a platform demo. And now, here is today's podcast.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the iGaming Next podcast. My name is Jesper Kjellbrink, and I am so excited because I'm here today with Paris Smith. Welcome, Paris.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, it's great. It's my pleasure. And I mean, we don't know each other that well, but we met on a number of conferences and we've been speaking on the same panels, et cetera, et cetera. And when we planned this, I said, I really want to have Paris here because you always come out as very thoughtful, very intelligent, but also with opinionated. You're strong in what you're thinking and what you want to say. So I'm really excited about this one, and having you here, we will of course touch topics like diversification, glass ceilings, leadership, but also Pinnacle, of course, and eSport. But first, I would really like to start with, who is Paris?
That's a great question. I am probably, I'd have to say I'm the luckiest person. I have the luxury and the privilege to work with Pinnacle, and it is, I feel like I'm living the dream. The person that I am, first and foremost, I'm actually a mother. I have a daughter, and she's been, I've actually brought her to a conference, which is quite entertaining. She's older. And I'm also, I think another word to describe me would be team player. My history is basketball for athletics, and I was always like the clutch player, the one who wanted the ball in the last minute. Yeah. And, I love pressure, love stress, but, with everything, I work hard. And I'm just, I feel like I've gotten this amazing opportunity, and I'm trying to make the most of it for myself, for my team and the company.
But that's fantastic. And what you're mentioning here is some aspects of leadership that we will come back to later that I think is very, very important. And that's having being an athlete or doing these kind of things, whether it's swimming or playing basketball or dancing or whatever, it mm-hmm. gives you a discipline of actually not giving up. You know what it takes to make it. And I think that's a large part of actually being a leader, or what do you say?
Well, I agree 100%. I think the biggest benefit that I received from my career, or whatever you want to call it, basketball, is understanding the team dynamics. Mm-hmm. And you're only as strong as your weakest link. It's something I've always, I was the person that would always try to get the other players on the team to practice with me all the time, because I knew if I was great, that's fantastic, but we have to win games. Mm-hmm. So, that leader, that teamwork concept, I think is something sometimes that leaders miss out on. Mm-hmm. There's no I in team, my favorite saying. But at the same time, I think that coming together to succeed and do something great together, that's really the driver within leadership.
I agree. I think neither one of you or me would have done a percentage of what we perhaps has achieved so far without having a lot of great people around us. I mean, we are so dependent on the rest of the team. That's given. But from that into a topic that interests me and always has interested me, and the more time I spend in the iGaming industry, the more I think about it, and that is diversification. I see this industry as, at least of those I've been in, as one of the most diversified industries there is there. I mean, we have, take Mr. Green, for instance, 34 different nationalities, basically all the religions you could find. Sexuality was mixed in, I mean, as it should be. Gender-wise, it was 48, 52, something like that. And still, I mean, you are a handful. You are part of a handful of women CEOs in this industry. And we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of iGaming companies, and still there are so few women at the top.
Yeah.
Why is this?
Well, it's interesting. What's interesting is I'm having a conversation with a woman that has All In Diversity, Kelly Kahn, and we were talking about this, how, you know, when COVID hit, you know, there's kind of a bit of a panic, and myself and a group of other CEOs all got together. We started talking about the, you know, our situations, different locations, and, you know, how are we handling things? But it was all men. And then I said, it'd be interesting to see who the women are. And we just, you know, came up with 18 women that are CEOs, mm-hmm. a little difference. And where, you know, for me, from a conversational perspective, is sports betting and casino. You know, I'm so, you know, I've got great casino people, fortunately, but casino is not my forte, sports betting is. So, you know, but overall as a industry, I think it's coming a long ways, especially over the last year. You know, you've got some big names coming out, you know, bringing on women CEOs. But it's interesting because I've had three key bosses in my career. And by the way, we're talking about teams. I've been in this industry 27 years. So if the only way to stay relevant is to have great people around you, I mean, I started out in phone betting. So, you know, it's not an accident why I'm still surviving. And it certainly isn't because I'm so phenomenal. It's the people around me. But back to the women, it's so interesting because the three people that I worked for, they were all very specific about wanting me. And I never thought of the fact that I was a woman. I just felt like it was me. And it was only really until like 6 years ago, everybody kept saying, oh, what's it, you know, it must be hard being the only woman. I'm like, oh, I didn't even notice. But yeah.
Yeah, but I think you're touching a very important point here, and that is we are recruiting individuals, and it has always to be a me in this, and I might be a man or a woman, or I might come from Sweden or from the US or from Asia or whatever, and so it's always a me. But still, if we look at the statistics, most me's out there in the CEO positions are male. Do we have a glass ceiling also in the iGaming industry, or is there? Why do we have this? Why is this like this? I have a theory, but I would like to listen to you first.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a theory about it, but I do believe that, you know, it's all about creating an influence. You know, you can be a leader, you can be a CEO. There's a lot of CEOs that sit there, but it's really about being successful and making change. So whether you're a man or a woman or, you know, or whatever race you are, you have to be able to make positive change. So, you know, it's really about understanding what person is going to be the best individual to make good decisions and be an influencer, whereby, you know, I feel like as time progresses, I do think it's, you know, it is shifting slowly, and I think it's going to continue to shift because there is a whole, especially with COVID, you know, there's a whole new level of empathy that is becoming, you know, a requirement for leadership. Not a lot of, well, you know, not a lot of women and not a lot of men have empathy. So it's really, you know, just about finding the right person for the job. At Pinnacle, we are extremely diverse, and there's, you know, when I hear, oh, we should have X amount of women by X amount of time, like that's a bit of a turnoff for me. I get it because you want people to be conscious and aware. But at the same time, all we care about is getting the right person.
Yeah.
That's all we look at. And I don't know if it has anything to do with my team having a female leader, but they are very adamant to get the right person. There's times where we're like, yeah, it might be good to, you know, get a, whether it be a woman or man in a certain team, just to kind of shake things up, because, you know, like, especially with different math and trading is typically more male dominated than female in development, but we still have a good spread of diversity across the whole organization.
No, but that's good. And I mean, you and the other top women today are kind of role models. And I think that is needed, because what we see also, what we see here is, if I might be guessing here now, but or generalizing, but I would say that in the pool of applicants, you have more male applicants than women applicants. And that's not because there's a glass ceiling. You have a lot of fantastic talented women on mid levels and moving up, et cetera, et cetera. But then something happens, and it might be two things. First of all, I mean, children, of course, carrying children and giving birth gives a break in a very timely sense. You can't see past that, but that should not be a hindrance in itself. But then I also think male or guys are a bit more stupid in the sense, now I might have a lot of people hating me here, but in the sense, I got my first CEO job when I was 28. They called me from a Swedish newspaper up in the middle of Sweden, and they asked me, yes, but do you want to be the CEO of our company? I hesitated for a millisecond. I mean, I didn't even, the word no didn't even occur to me. It was a yes. And then I start thinking about all the, wow, I have to bring my family up there. What did I actually, can I do this job, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. While women, especially young women, are more, they're more thoughtful. They think about these things and they tend to say no, which would have been the clever thing. Honestly, I succeeded on that job and that built my career, but the odds for me to fail was like, I mean, right, they were basically given. So, but somehow with a good team and all that stuff, we did some good things there. And I think that's also a kind of a personality, or am I wrong there? Is are male more prudent to say yes? And why women are a bit more like, think about it. And then they do the calculations more cleverly than men are doing.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. There's studies that say, if you get, you know, well, a man is much more, you know, they would apply for a job that they're not qualified for.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
Only apply if she's 100% qualified.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then the other thing is we have a value perception, mm-hmm. you know, where you don't want to get overpaid because you want to make sure that you're going to get what you can provide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so from a negotiation perspective, you know, there's, and that's the thing, you know, how many times have we hired somebody that's, you think on paper and the way they sound, it's really amazing. Mm-hmm. And then you get them in the door and it's like, wah, wah, you know, they can't do the business. They're totally out of their scope, out of everything. What we have done for that, just as a quick HR aside, we do different testing because we want to make sure that, you know, I mean, we treat recruitment from a risk management perspective, which is just in the DNA of Pinnacle. And it's been super successful for us to do that. But going back to your point, it is really about that men are more inclined to apply for those jobs, even if they're not totally qualified for it. Incidentally, every once in a while, you know, so I guess the moral of that story would be, if you have a female applicant, you probably want to look at it a little bit closer because there's probably something there. But it happens the other way, where they just think, oh, they have a female CEO, let me apply, I'm sure, you know, I'll get in there. And it's like, no, that's not how it works, actually.
But I agree with you, and that's the feeling I have as well, that there's a difference there, and by that the pool of talents appear to be a bit skewed. There seems to be more guys in that pool than female, and this is something that we should work with. And I know that I worked with some amazing HR directors, and lately with Roberta Gears at Mr. Green, and there is a strong job in doing this. And still, when I look back on my career, I have recruited women in C-level positions, absolutely. but I have recruited more men. That is the way it is. And then back to what you said before, I'm always looking at the person. I don't really give a damn whether they are male or female or white or black or speak English or Swedish or whatever background. The right person should do the job. And whoever that is will get the job. But at the same time, the pool is skewed. And that's something we have to work with, I think. Yeah. Cool. Good. Modern leadership. How would you define? I mean, we have a COVID situation, as I said, and we have to be more feeling in it. It's difficult to lead over videos like we are doing here now. I know that you are in North Dakota now, and you have your people scattered all over the globe, basically. And so, what is the new leadership? What is the new trend in leadership? And how have they been affected by the pandemic?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, you know, I mean, there's business, and then, you know, what I'm trying to keep my finger on the pulse of course, is mental health as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we have people that have been in jurisdictions that have full lockdowns. Mm-hmm. I can't even fathom what they're going through. You and I had a little conversation about balance, but like talk about finding an impossibility of balance. You know, you want people to spend family time, but then sometimes they're like, well, work time is my time, you know, and there is no me time in this time, unfortunately. I think, like I said earlier, the empathy is a huge part of it, but it's also about really looking at opportunities. You know, like when it all happened and, you know, it started getting ugly in March, you know, nobody knew anything. You know, mm-hmm. we didn't know if there'd be no sports to the end of the year. That would have been, of course, catastrophic. Mm-hmm. And also in sports betting, this is never to be heard of. Like, this is a situation that just nobody could have predicted that there would be a period of time where there were no sports. Fortunately, we had esports, which we'll get to later. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, it was really about, there's a lot of things I would have done differently, but we just wanted to make sure everybody was safe. We wanted to sustain the business and come out of it stronger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we ticked all three, fortunately. But, you know, and then, of course, when there's adversity and crisis, you know, that's a real time to see how people mm-hmm. work together. And my team, fortunately, that's where we really shine, actually, is when we have to get something, you know, in a crisis mode. I don't know. Yeah. It's just the nature.
I agree. Do you agree with me if I say that it has been more important to care about the people now when you don't see them that often and you can't kind of touch them, you can't shake their hands and so forth, you can't give them a hug when needed? Is caring more of a prominent leadership skill during this pandemic than it was before, or is that just something that I imagine?
No, that's 100% accurate, and maybe that's why there's a lot more female CEOs being hired.
Yeah, but that's what I'm coming to. That is what my question is heading to. I think this is an opportunity for female CEOs and female leaders to step up, and it also. Yeah. Another thing that has shown extremely important is how well you actually, let me rephrase that. Before the pandemic, working from home was a bit of an escape and no one really knew what you did. And everyone suspected that, you swell up in the morning, you fix something in the house, and then you answer a couple of mails, and then you kind of, half worked. Mm-hmm. Now everyone realizes that you can actually work from home because you are working and you are producing as much as before. And shouldn't that also help, especially when you're in the young age, like your early 30s, you're setting up families, et cetera, et cetera. I think this should help that generation of not only the women, but also the male, of actually finding a better balance in the work life.
Mm-hmm. It definitely should. The interesting thing is, in the midst, so let's go back to like June, July, mm-hmm. it was like, wow, we can probably downsize the office. Like, this is really working. And now we're in COVID fatigue, mm-hmm. and you realize not every job can be remote, but a lot can. Yeah. And, you know, so those are the ones to hone in on. But those interactive jobs, You know, they, those people, they do need, you know, what I love is if and when, hopefully sooner than later, we get back to a bit more normalized, then people can have, you know, where they work from home and then find the true balance, you know, but I think we need to get through this in order to get to that stage.
No, I agree. I actually, this morning, I can see this morning, I woke up and had breakfast and everything. And then I see my wife is shining, like, okay, it's an office day today. So she's in the office like once every 10th day or something like that. And she shines up. She really wants to be there. She's had enough with me and this apartment and sitting in the small office we have, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, definitely, there's a fatigue right now on the COVID. But back to another interesting thing, and that's balance in life. I think what this period has shown us now that there are no balance. You either have it too much or have too little of whatever it is. I mean, can you ever find, because people are saying, I will have balance in life. My end goal is to have balance. Can you ever find balance? I think it's impossible.
Yeah, I think balance is happiness. Yeah. So as long as you're happy, you have the balance.
Exactly.
And it is, you know, for me, I just happen to absolutely love my job. I get up so early because I can't wait to start working. It's a bit, maybe it's sad, I don't know. But I also love being with my friends and I love training and I love being with my daughter and my family. So, you know, but and I make that time, but, you know, I'm never tied to anything. And I think, you know, you and I both traveled so much that we kind of had that kind of remote work. We could get it done from an airport, from an airplane. So that was great. Mm-hmm. But you know, now, you know, it's a different level of balance. Yes. And, you know, the goal is just to be happy and do the right things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. The reward is actually when you have that feeling of joy. You're happy what you've done. You come out, you've been meeting and you have been laughing, or you just did that, whatever that task you have been worried about and so forth. And that fills you with the joy. So I totally agree. When you have that balance and when you come home and the kids are happy, you are happy, et cetera, et cetera. So you probably put it very good there. Balance is happiness. If you're happy, you are in balance. That's good. Good thing. Yeah. If you want to work a lot, you work a lot. If you want to play a lot of golf, you play a lot of golf or whatever you do. I don't know. But if that makes you happy, so look for happiness. Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Makes me happy. So
sorry, actually, this weather, we have the same weather, you and I, because you're in North Dakota right now and I'm in Stockholm. And we discussed weather before and we realized that if you are from Sweden or North Dakota, weather is where you start all the conversations. And it's pitch dark outside. It's snowing like crazy. And I believe that Paris will not run anything this weekend because it's going to be 22 minus Celsius over the weekend. We had a weekend with minus 15. So yes, and that makes me happy. This weather and this situation actually makes me happy. So you can find happiness in the most crazy places. Pinnacle. If I would say it, you run it a bit under the radar from the beginning, and then it kind of boom. So I mean, you are super well known today. Everyone knows about your efforts in sports betting, but and lately in esport, you were probably one of the first to really take in esport and did a lot of bets on that one. Could you tell us a bit about that story? Because this has happened under your stewardship.
Yeah. So with you know, with Pinnacle, we always try to be innovative. We always, you know, we have, again, an amazing team. Mm-hmm. And we listen, and if somebody has an idea, you know, Marco Bloom was relatively new to the organization. And we had a huge group of professional gamers join the risk management team. So he was like, hey, you know, can we try this? We're like, yeah, $25 max bet, you know, put up what you want, have fun, just have fun with it. You know, and again, you think if they're happy, they're going to work better, we're happy. And it really just started like that. And Marco, and, you know, he would get a couple people involved and, you know, he would show me the tournaments And it was like really wanky. And, you know, they had some guys behind a desk in these funny little outfits and very casual. And then, you know, fast forward 10 years, I go to the World Championships in Berlin, and it's like as big of an event as a, you know, NBA final. And it's just like, what the hell's happened here? And the people are celebrities, the same people that were in these little wanky outfits in this stage, you know, they are like superstars. And the teams are walking out onto the, up to their podiums. And they're literally like, everybody's high-fiving them, like the NBA players when they run out onto the court. So, you know, the evolution of this has been phenomenal. I believe the success that we have had is obviously within the people that have taken it passionately, cared about it, and created what we have. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that's, it's a little bit difficult to replicate for the most part. You know, a lot of people take the lines and redo them, but there is something to be said about how you actually manage the risk of that. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, the Pinnacle solution has come on strong on the esports side, especially during the pandemic. You know, esports, that was the biggest godsend, you know, that, you know, I was, Marco had a big, you know, I had a big heart around Marco in my head the whole time during the pandemic for bringing in the esports and creating this sustainability that we were able to have with it. But yeah, it's, we've just, the team has done such an amazing job, and they understand it so well. You know, there's esports, there's the data rights, there's the tournaments, there's, you know, the different sponsorships, which is something we're just dabbling in. But it's an ecosystem that is, if you're not passionate, you're not going to understand it, and you're going to undervalue it, and you're going to understaff it. And we have just been able to listen to our team, and they tell us what they want, and we support it wholeheartedly. That's where the success has come.
I mean, that's interesting, because I think that being that early and building this ecosystem and putting all this passion into it, it also builds a hurdle for others to enter. Barrier of entries will be super high, because everyone else will be compared to what you are doing. So I think you really succeeded in this one, and it comes out so clearly. And a question there. From the beginning, you were a bit under the radar as a brand, and now you are a bit more exposed, especially in the industry. And that would necessarily not bring you more players, but is being visible in conferences and being out there and talking about the Pinnacle and so forth, is that the way of building the brand internally? Is that employer branding? Is that important for employer branding?
Yeah, I think it is. And it's really, I mean, it was very pragmatic in doing this. When I came into Pinnacle, I didn't have the autonomy that I have now. And, you know, now that I know exactly what we're standing for, what we're doing, and having new ownership, it was at that moment in time that we wanted people to understand Pinnacle. Mm-hmm. Because it is an amazing story. It is, you know, there's a lot of sports books. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of sports books that are marketing companies. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a very few genuine, you know, to the core sports betting companies, mm-hmm. risk management companies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, of course, that spun off into Pinnacle Solution, because we did feel like we have a niche there where we can actually monetize other people's volume, mm-hmm. where, you know, other people are just trading it. We're managing the risk for it. So it was and also I think it's helped with the Pinnacle Solution, with people understanding better who we are as a core company and then what that will translate to for them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're proud of it. You know, everybody was always wondering the big, you know, when I joined Pinnacle, they're like, there's an inner circle. You're never going to get in. Mm-hmm. And the inner circle hired me. So yes. I got in.
You got in. Yeah.
But, you know, it is, you know, and I think what we don't want to lose is, we don't want to be secretive, but we do want to remain humble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's one of my favorite things about the new ownership. You know, he's just the most genuine, humble person, and we will continue to do great things, and they're going to become much greater, hopefully, in the future. But, you know, it's, we're just never going to you know, be out there saying, oh, we're just so amazing. You know, that's not who we are.
I like that. Successful and humble. That's the perfect combination. There are so many successful people out there being assholes at the same time. So being successful and humble is amazing. It's a really good strategy to have. And I like how you have built this and how you come out in the industry. And I totally understand why you're doing this B2B now. We see this as a trend with a lot of operators spinning off their platforms. Betthard is doing it. Betsson is doing it. Kindred did it with Kambi quite some time ago. But I think what you say here is that you can't just do it. You have to kind of bring in this passion and to drive it forward. So it would be really interesting to follow that one. I saw that Danske Spil has joined as one of your customers. That's amazing. Yeah. Congratulations to that.
Yeah, thank you.
So that will be really, really cool to follow.
Yeah.
Good. And then eSport. We have to talk about the eSport. It's an amazing thing. As you said, it started with these small kids drinking Red Bull and playing PC games. And everyone was like, what is this? And we have been kind of hustling our own kids that you spend too much time in front of the computer, et cetera, et cetera. And now we see that, whoa, these guys are rock stars and they make millions and they actually... It's a profession in itself. How much from a betting perspective? How much did the fact that all the other major sports was closed for months? How much did that mean to esport as a gambling product?
Well, I think it became front and center, and a lot of people that normally, you know, there isn't a massive crossover from an esports bettor to other sport better. Right. So, and that's one of the misconceptions people have. So you have to target them as an esports better, but when there's nothing, a better is going to be like, well, I keep hearing about this esports at Pinnacle. They take a look at it. They start going on Twitch, following, you know, so we had a lot of people dabbling, if you will, into the esports side. What was so interesting is the amount of, you know, the esports product grew significantly, obviously, over the pandemic or during and now. But, you know, some people, it dropped right back off as soon as other sports came on. But for us, it's continued to increase. But the other sports have come back so strong. You know, I mean, we really, when we said, let's come back stronger, you know, I think we're just in such a comfortable place to keep the catalyst of growth and success. Yeah. Going.
Sorry, Paris, to interrupt you. Is that because when I hear you say that, I would suspect this is because you have the passion. This was not just a substitute for you. For others, it was a substitute. Okay, we don't have any football. Let's add some esport. While you had this as part of your DNA, this is one of your core products. Not the biggest one, because when football was there, it was, of course, much, much bigger. But you had it as you had the passion for this. Is this why you think the players stayed with you, because they felt that this is for real?
I think it's that, but also, you know, they don't see the passion, but what they can see is the amazing product. So during the lockdown, COVID, all of our guys, they really focused on honing in. Like, we took resources from every sport and put it into the esport product and made it better. You know, everybody thinks having, you know, you saw the Y2K and all that stuff, you know, all this football and NBA, it was all great, but that's not, you know, it is a part of esports betting. I don't want to discount that, but the core esport products, Dota, Counter-Strike, League of Legends, etc., those to make, they had so much opportunity to make them better, more product depth, just a better solid product. And the guys did an amazing job. So then I think that's a huge part of why it carried over.
I agree. I mean, you have an amazing esport product per se. I also think that you can't have a great product without having the passion. I was running an e-commerce company called Euroflores. We're sending flowers back and forth, like 1-800 flowers in the US, all over Europe. And we had a fantastic customer service manager there. Her name was Katya. we talked about this, and she had this idea of putting mirrors in front of the customer service people, because basically at that time, most of it, 50, 60% was over the phone. And she said, if they smile, the customers start to smile. Yeah, but come on, they can't see you. They can't see them. I told her, this is like landlines. And she said, doesn't matter. They have tested this apparently somewhere. And if I smile when I talk in the phone, you hear that. And you start to smile as well. And that's passion. If you put passion into your product, even if it's bits of code and it come out as something, I might be naive, but I think that is shown in the product that I'm using, whatever that is, if that's a soda drink or a e-commerce site or playing some sports book or whatever. I think that passion actually shows. Once again, you have a fantastic product there. More entertainment. Everyone is in this industry now is talking about more entertainment. We have new kind of customers coming in. We have during the pandemic, the transmission from offline to online casino has exploded, of course. But we also have a new batch of players that hasn't played casino either land-based or online before, but have had nothing to do or time to spend and money to spend during the pandemic and started to come in here. How do we retain these players? Do you see them? Are they different? Or is this just a myth that is created by the industry right now?
Well, it's interesting because we've never been focused on casino until right before the pandemic. We brought in a really solid casino manager. And again, if I could do some things differently, I would have brought him in, you know, so he could have gotten more things that he wanted done earlier. But it's interesting because I think, you know, we're still teeter-tottering. You know, there's still people that are, you know, 1 week they're working, the next week they're in a lockdown or month or whatever it might be. So, you know, I think just to have a solid product, solid customer service, you know, decent promotions, obviously, in the casino, you know, they are being retained. So although, you know, we are seeing a small increase in the casino during the pandemic, then now it's actually, we're really getting the benefits of it because we started investing so much into the resourcing of development for it, you know, just to get something out there that would be, you know, slightly more competitive because we've always just focused on the sports betting side. But, you know, it didn't even dawn on me that I didn't realize so many of the companies were predominantly casino that I thought were sports betting. And I'm like, how are you doing? Oh my God, this is just awful. No, our casinos increased by 40%. I'm like, oh, gosh, if I could only have seen this. but I did have esports in my back pocket, so I didn't feel bad. But yeah, I do. But I think that, you know, it's a continuation. And there are people that are more comfortable staying at home. And, you know, it has given a huge opportunity to the regulated markets for online, whether it be sports betting or, you know, the new emergence of online casinos. I think it's going to get more popular in the US market. So it's just about having, you know, a good solid product.
Good. Let's round this up with one of my favorite topics, and that's social consciousness, social conscious. And I would like to take out responsible gaming out of that equation, because in my book, responsible gaming is not social conscience or social responsibility. It's actually part of your business. That's what we should do. What else can the gaming industry, what are the things that we are good at, and what are the things that we could improve in broadened, talking about social responsibility or social cautious?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's just so many, so many causes right now that we can focus on. For Pinnacle, you know, we've always had a very philanthropical group that have always wanted to give and do different things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but we've always tried to give to kids, you know, so more of sports to help kids that need some kind of a escape. And, you know, whether it be the baseball program in Curacao or football programs or, you know, whatever it might be. But, you know, I do think that it's a huge opportunity. And they're innately, I don't know, it, almost everybody I know in the industry, which is quite a few, they're all givers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but it's not like, hi, everybody, we're giving something. It's really more as, you know, just doing stuff for the sake of doing it, not for the sake of being recognized for it. And, you know, what may have to happen is that people just, you know, you don't have to grandstand it, but have a higher awareness of that, mm-hmm. because we are very charitable. So, you know, we just need to focus a little bit more. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things we could work together on, whether a conference has something where all the people attending the conference can do something, but there's, you know, there's so many, there's environmental issues, you know, all the offices we have, we try to, you know, do non-bottled water, you know, just there's so many small things that we can do with such a massive influence bandwidth that we have.
Good. I agree with you. And I think it starts with being conscious about these things. And it's also the small things. And small things adds up to the big things, whether it's the environment or programs where we can help. And I personally, for me, the environment is so close to my heart, being up here in the north and seeing how the winters are getting shorter and shorter. And eventually my grandkids will have a couple of days of snow where I had like seasons of it and loved it. And so that's really close to my heart. And I think the iGame, yeah, we're not producing stuff or shipping or selling stuff, but still we are producing quite some energy and here we can do things together. But also what you're saying here, helping the kids and to get them to move, to do things, and whether that's baseball or basketball or whatever. But you and me as old athletes, we know that the importance of this, how that has... That's such a strong DNA, even if we never ended up as gold medalists in any of this. But we spend a lot of our youth playing sport, and that has meant so much in how we are today. And yeah. I think that's fantastic you're doing this, and especially if you can do it in places like Curaçao, where giving is not perhaps as given as in many other countries, I assume. Good. Paris, this has been, as I thought and hoped, this has been a fantastic chat. I'm really, really, really happy that we could have this conversation. And thank you a lot. And hope we can start traveling again so we can meet each other on the Fisker conferences. Those are, we should really round off of that. We discussed that before. Those are needed. You see now when you can't go to a conference, how much they really mean in meeting people and kind of getting the ideas going through your head.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Missing all of our people.
We do, exactly. No, on that note, once again, thanks a lot, Paris, for joining me in this. It's been fantastic.
Love it. Thank you.
Thanks.
This fruitful discussion has been brought to you by our sponsors, Pragmatic Solutions, leaders in intelligent platform technology. Is your business struggling to keep up with the development demands on your current gaming platform? Well, then it's time to upgrade to the Pragmatic Solutions PAM platform. Multi-tenant, multi-currency, multi-regional, API-based, rule engine automated, regulation-ready, it's all here out of the box. Smart businesses leverage Pragmatic SaaS model and license powerful modern technology for a fraction of the cost of in-house development. Upgrade your business to the Pragmatic Solutions PAM platform. Visit www.pragmatic.solutions to arrange a platform demo. Stay safe and take care.